Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Janie Thompson. I'm a UCLA law student serving as pro bono counsel on behalf of Petitioner Isabel Marquez. I'm joined today by Christopher Craig from O'Melveny Myers, and we'll be splitting our oral argument time. I'd like to begin by addressing Ms. Marquez's asylum claim. The record before us compels a finding that Ms. Marquez...
Counsel, forgive me, but if you could speak a little more slowly, the acoustics are hard for me in here.
Of course. The record before us compels a finding that Ms. Marquez be granted asylum because of her reasonable fear of future persecution on account of her religion. This court in Zhang v. Ashcroft determined that if a petitioner cannot practice their religion in their native country, that it rises to the level of religious persecution. In subsequent cases, that case actually was for the higher burden of withholding of removal, and in subsequent cases, the court applied the same analysis to asylum.
Did she suffer religious persecution when she was in her home country, before her departure?
This ban on the Mana Church, which is a minority Christian faith in Angola.
I asked you a question.
Oh,
it calls for a yes or no answer. You can explain after you give me a yes or no answer, but it'll help me understand your answer if you tell me. Was she subject to persecution?
No, Your Honor.
Before she left. Okay, so, and I will let you explain, but you understand that if you suffer persecution before, then you have a presumption of future persecution. You don't get the benefit of that presumption. You agree with that?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. So these are developments that happened after she left.
Yes, Your Honor.
Go ahead.
In December 2007, which was after the petitioner left Angola, that was when the Angolan government revoked registration for the Mana Church. And when Angola has a provision requiring that religious groups have registration in order to have legal status and in order to have the ability to congregate and spread their beliefs. This happened, as I said, in December 2007, so it happened after Ms. Marquez left, but it prevents her from returning and being able to practice her religion.
What evidence is there that others who are members of the church have been persecuted?
Ms. Marquez credibly testified that several members of the church have been imprisoned and others have been threatened with imprisonment for spreading their beliefs. And at least one church member was poisoned. This evidence was corroborated by Ms. Rita Raimondo.
She wasn't there, right? I mean, this all happened after she left, so unless she's telepathic or...
Correct, Your Honor.
...divinely inspired. I mean, you know, how does she know?
The Mana Church has a very tightly knit group of... They have churches in several nations, and they remain connected through the Internet, radio, television. They also have weekly meetings of church elders, of which Ms. Marquez and Ms. Raimondo are both church elders. And this is how they stay in contact and find out what's going on.
Why isn't this the kind of evidence that a reasonable trier of fact could simply reject? Say, you know, if she wasn't there, she didn't see it, she didn't talk to any of the people. This is basically rumor, hearsay, probably multiple level hearsay, and we just don't credit it. Why can't a trier of fact reasonably fail to credit such evidence?
Your Honor, in this case, Ms. Marquez has a great fear of contacting local Angolan authorities and staying in contact with people. And because of that, it's been difficult to get evidence that is more specific. We do, however, have evidence
from... But she has a burden, right? She has a burden of proof, and the fact that she finds it difficult to meet the burden doesn't relieve her of the burden, right?
Correct.
That's the law.
Correct, Your Honor. She was found credible, so her testimony is to be taken as true. And in addition, she provided other documents from Mana adherents who wrote a letter to the Angolan government protesting the ban, saying that it violated their right to religious freedom that is in theory provided under the Angolan constitution, but is in fact not upheld because of this restriction on minority faiths.
Was she a member of the church before she left?
She has been a member of the church since 1989, I believe.
But she wasn't an elder?
She's received additional training since she left. She took three courses to become a church elder and gain more authority in the church.
So the answer to the question is she was not an elder before she left?
Based on the record, I don't believe so. This has been a more recent development. This has happened. She's gained more authority in the church as she's continued her time there and was asked to come to the United States to start home groups here of the Mana Church.
Counsel, what in your view is the significance of Exhibit 9, the International Religious Freedom Report, which seems to suggest that things were not so problematic for religious minorities?
Your Honor, the Religious Freedom Report says that Angola generally respects religious freedom, but this does not cite to cases when Angola may not respect religious freedom. Also, this report predates when the Manna Church was banned, and we don't have updated record evidence. Moreover, as both...
But wasn't the church unbanned later? Or the ban revoked in some way, that if there could be a registration if they followed certain procedures?
Your Honor, there is record evidence that they were invited to re-register. However, there's no evidence that they have, in fact, been granted registration or that
they
would be.
Well, isn't it the invitation that matters if the question is, what's the government's attitude?
Well, the fact that they were invited to re-register is more a broad grant. There are several minority faiths that have not been granted registration and are still pending. They still have pending applications. Moreover, one of the requirements is that a religious group have more than 100,000 adherents. And based on the record, the Manna Church only has 25,000, which suggests that they would not be granted registration even if they applied. I would like to cede the rest of my time to my co-counsel.
Very well. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors. I'm Christopher Craig, also pro bono counsel with O'Melveny & Myers. I can address any Convention Against Torture issues that the panel would like to address, although I am also happy to continue talking about asylum. As Ms. Thompson explained, we think that the religious claims here alone justify asylum for Ms. Marquez. Even though she herself did not witness what happened in Angola, she adequately corroborated that, both the testimony of Ms. Raimondo and also with some of the reports that are in the record itself. There's a letter from the bishops of the church saying that it's been banned, and there's other record evidence that shows that the Manna Church has, in fact, been banned.
Counsel, I found the briefing a little bit confusing on the point you just made, where you said the record regarding religious persecution alone you think warrants asylum. Are you making other claims for asylum?
The other claim we're making for asylum is to say that the religion claim, although we think that alone it justifies asylum, that the religion claim should be analyzed under the one central reason standard. So it's not that we're arguing specifically that there are other claims. We would concede that her journalism claim and her claim about the bank loan on their own would not merit asylum. So it's still about the religion claim for us. It's just that the religion, we think, under the one central reason standard, does not need to be evaluated in isolation. It can be evaluated under this totality of the circumstances test.
Well, that's exactly the problem that I'm having, because it sounds to me that maybe I am understanding your briefing correctly, and you're wanting to sweep in what I call the 1996 journalism incident, if I've got the year right, and also the claim regarding the debt that your client owes to someone who I think is a member of the police force there. And you want us to consider that as part of the single claim for asylum, which is based on religious persecution. Is that right?
Yes, Your Honor, that's correct.
All right.
The reason why we think those both inform is because under the one central reason standard, her fear of returning to the country, even though we think her fears based on religious persecution are enough because of what's going on with the Manna Church, because she cannot practice her religion openly, because of the Falun Gong line of cases that say that being unable to practice her religion openly is enough to merit asylum. The burden on us is not even that high under the totality of circumstances and one central reason standard, because she also faces an individualized risk of persecution if she goes back, specifically from Silva and Correnta, because of the bank loans she owes them, and because of her past history as an opposition journalist. We think that all these fears that she has combined contribute to her reasonable fear of future persecution.
The only threats I saw in the record, and I want to make sure that you correct me if I'm wrong, but the only threats I saw pertaining directed to your client relate to the journalism claim and the other claim, the debt claim, not religious persecution. Is that right?
That's correct, Your Honor. Although we think the reason that we can't really speculate entirely as to what would happen as to her religion. However, she didn't have the opportunity to face specific threats because of her religion, because the religion was banned after she fled the country.
Is the argument that even if any of these fears are not individually enough, that you can aggregate them, that in the aggregate, they could provide a sufficient fear?
Yes.
I don't think I've seen a case like that. I thought you either have a fear of this or you have a fear of that. But if you have three different areas where you're afraid, but neither of them is quite enough, I don't see how you can aggregate them.
Well, the Parisimova case that articulates the one central reason standard is a little different because it was one incident that the petitioner in that case had suffered. She had been attacked in, I believe, Kazakhstan because of
that. Whereas here, they are totally disparate. The dead claim has nothing to do with her religious claim at all, right? I mean, it just happens to be one wholly unrelated cause, right? And isn't that pretty clear that that is just a private dispute between her and individuals who happen, some of whom happen to be policemen?
I think the link, Your Honor, is that because there's ample record evidence that members of the Mana faith have been arrested in Angola, and because she faces that risk, even though she faces that risk because of her religion and Corrente and Silva are not particularly interested in her religion, I think the fact that she could be arrested because of her membership in the Mana faith could put her and put the country on, could put the police in Angola on alert that she's there. Corrente and Silva can find her.
What does that have to do with the death claim?
It would allow the member of the police and secret police that are after her because of this debt to find her. If she was in prison because of her membership in the Mount of Faith, if she is indeed persecuted for that, then I think we can say that there's at least a 10% chance of her future persecution because of her religion. Once she is found by the police.
Trial fact found otherwise. What do you do with that?
Sorry, Your
Honor. Trial fact, the IJ and the BIA found otherwise. What do you do with that?
I think we can say on this record that their finding is erroneous. Whether or not the facts below constitute persecution is reviewed de novo. Whether or not they are sufficient for asylum is reviewed de novo. And I think under the facts of this record, we can say that the IJ and the BIA found erroneously. I think they overly relied on the country report, which happened before the Mana Church was even banned. I think they ignored the letter from the bishop. I think they ignored Ms. Raimundo's testimony. I think they concentrated on the fact that Ms. Marquez herself was not
there. When you say ignored, do you mean they weren't persuaded by it? I mean, they ignore it? They sort of like they don't refer to it? Ignored, it's like they didn't know it was there? They didn't find it persuasive, right?
I think in the case of the country report, we can say that they ignored the fact that the country report predated the Mana Church being banned. I mean, I think they did, in their reliance on the country report, they ignored the circumstances of the country report. The country report is really something of a red herring, and they essentially below said, this country report says that freedom of religion is essentially open, even though that predated the Mana Church ban. And then they just went on from there and said, okay, this is, reasonably speaking, a religiously free country. I would agree that they didn't find Ms. Raimundo's testimony persuasive and they didn't find Ms. Marquez's testimony persuasive. But I think that also we can say is clearly erroneous. I think
you have 2 minutes left. Do you want to say this for rebuttal?
Thank you, Your Honor. I wasn't checking the clock.
We'll hear from the government.
May it please the Court, Matthew George for the Attorney General. It seems Petitioner has now changed her argument to saying that the agency abused its discretion in weighing the evidence. However, the standard of review here is substantial evidence. Whether the Board found certain evidence, such as the testimony of Petitioner versus the country reports in the record, more persuasive is something entirely within the agency's discretion. Substantial evidence supports the Board's finding that the country reports show that Angola respects religious freedom and that Petitioner's testimony was not persuasive and was not corroborated despite two opportunities provided by the immigration judge to corroborate that testimony. She's now also conceded that her journalism and debt asylum claims do not merit asylum on their own. Therefore, despite the fact that she's failed to exhaust them by raising them to the Board, she's now conceded that they do not merit asylum on their own merit.
What is your response to this, the argument that the fears can be aggregated so that a person who has a small amount of concern about religious persecution but a huge amount of concern about something that isn't a protected ground, a dispute with a neighbor, debt collection, whatever it may be, how should we respond to that argument?
Well, I think that's the one central language. That's the language the court addressed in Parasimova. I can't pronounce that case. The one central reason language means it must be an important reason or not necessarily a primary reason, but I don't know if significant. I mean, there's some language in there that addresses exactly what the weighing sort of that concern must be. So if it just so happens, she's got this other unrelated religious dispute, whereas we've got Quarantar and Silva persecuting or harming her on account of this private debt, she would have to show that the religion was sort of the main motivation, or a protected ground was the main motivation of the harm she's going to suffer, and not that it's just sort of in there somewhere or in the aggregate. You know, she's a member of these different groups or these religions or whatever protected ground she may be a part of. It has to play a primary role. I think it's almost a but-for cause, is what the court said in Parasimova. And so there's no real aggregation of, hey, by the way, I'm a man of religion adherent, but you know, they're really after me because of this debt, but because I had this other status, that I can sort of bootstrap myself into a protected ground or asylum under the statute. The asylum, on account of a protected ground, has to be the motivating factor for that harm, and she hasn't shown that the two creditors here would be motivated by any protected ground. And in fact, she said it. First, it no longer merits asylum on its own, and she's failed to exhaust any well-founded fear on that basis. Again, looking at the corroboration issue, the immigration judge here was very specific on exactly what corroboration he wanted. He cited the very vague and undetailed testimony of both petitioner and Ms. Raimondo as exactly what he wanted objective corroboration of, and gave petitioner two opportunities to provide that corroboration. She failed to provide it, and also failed to provide an explanation. And under this court's decision in Wren, the immigration judge didn't need to go behind that decision and ask for an explanation. Now, in her board brief, she did attempt to provide explanations, but she did not provide the evidence at that time. She didn't ask to remand the case and present the evidence that she should have presented and say, hey, board, here's what my counsel failed to provide. Here it is now. Please send it back to the immigration judge and let him evaluate it now that we've got this evidence. And she didn't still in her brief today say, here's all this great evidence that my counsel should have provided. In addition, she never made any allegations that her counsel was ineffective for not providing that information. And so, therefore, the agency's corroboration findings on their own are substantial evidence that a petitioner has failed to meet her burden of showing a well-founded fear. The country reports in the record overwhelmingly say that Angola respects religious freedom.
Okay. Thank you. You've got a couple of minutes left for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. I would like to just say that one thing I think we need to distinguish is past versus future persecution. And even though Parasimova deals with past persecution, what we're looking at here is really the situation going forward. And what this Court, I think, needs to do is look at the one central
reason. But you do understand that finding of past persecution is quite important in that it then raises a presumption of future persecution. You can go forward. A petitioner can carry his burden with proving nothing further except past persecution, right?
Yes, Your Honor, that's
so
true.
So that's a pretty significant difference.
Yes, Your Honor, and we cannot argue past persecution on the basis of her religion because that religion was only banned after she left. I think we can say that there is past persecution in the form of Silva and Carrenta's threats to her, although that is not on a protected ground. And so the one central reason standard here comes in. I think this Court needs to weigh, going forward, what is her reasonable fear of future persecution? And I don't think we're trying to bootstrap, you know, the fact that she has this fear of Silva and Carrenta onto a weak religion claim.
Bootstrap has sort of a pejorative cast to it. So I know you don't want to use that, but the fact is you are trying to tie the two together. They don't work otherwise, right? She hasn't been threatened on account of religion, because she wasn't there when it was banned. She was, I mean, she was found credible that she had this dispute with powerful members of the police, I mean, the secret police and police, about money. And so what you're trying to do is tie them together. I mean, whether you call it bootstrapping or not is a way you cast it, right? But you are trying to tie them together.
I don't think we need to tie them together. Again, we think her religion is enough. And I think the court below, the BIA and the IJ, did indeed ignore some corroborating evidence, like the letters from the church in 311 to 313. There's also ample evidence on the Internet that her counsel below, unfortunately, did not cite. But I do think we gain even more from the benefit of the fact that she has also faced these threats.
I'm sorry, are you referring to evidence not on the record that's on the Internet? Is that what you're saying? Is that what you're sort of slipping in there?
Yes, Your Honor, but I think it just goes, it's well publicized.
You think it's appropriate to do that? I mean, if you want us to take judicial notice of something, you can, you know how to do that, right? There are rules about it. You file notice, you give opposing counsel an opportunity to object, give us a chance to actually look at the evidence and consider whether or not it's subject to judicial notice. But you can't just sort of slip it in there at argument. As you know, that's not really appropriate conduct, is it, counsel?
Your Honor, we did cite the Internet evidence in our opening brief, so I think Respondent is on notice of that evidence.
Did you seek judicial notice of it?
We did not go through the formal process. Sorry, Your Honor.
So how can we consider it? How can we consider something? I mean, you know, who knows how something gets on the Internet? I mean, stuff gets on the Internet that's patently false, right? There's tons of stuff like that. So the fact that you say it's on the Internet is actually probably proof of its falsehood more than its truth, right? So no, this is a serious question. How can you say, oh, it's in the Internet? I mean, you know, you can have particular Internet websites that might have credibility, but you know, again, this is not the forum to thrash those things out. It's not the kind of thing that's evidence that you have to present to a trier of fact.
It's a fair point, Your Honor. And
that was the job of your client's lawyer in the administrative agency, and the lawyer didn't present it, and then there's no claim of ineffective assistance of counsel. So it doesn't really come in here, does it?
Fair point, Your Honor. I don't think we need the Internet point, and I withdraw it. I think that there is, however, ample evidence that the Mana Church has been banned.
But there's an important point here. You're dealing also with counsel who's a student. I think it's important to set a proper example. It is not proper for you to cite materials that are not in the record. It's not proper to sort of cite them at oral argument or raise them before the court when you know perfectly well that these are things that we may not consider. And that's not part of professional behavior. You do understand that, right?
Yes, Your Honor. Okay. I apologize.
And so putting it in the brief, which presumably you did read before you filed with this court, and then raising it in argument is something that you should not have done.
Fair point, Your Honor. I apologize.
Indeed. Do you have anything further?
Just to reiterate that I think this record still amply shows that there has been persecution of the Mana faith and that Ms. Marquez has every reason to fear that going forward, in addition to the fears that she has of Sylvan Correnta torturing her for her bank loan.
Thank you. Case just argued. Stand submitted.